Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see 100,000,
600,000 deducted.
Yeah, you're looking at
it. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out to Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. Is who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven, the radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors with these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking, And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Construction. It's about 40% complete. All right, so this is the second Wafati that we have started construction on. People live in here off and on. People come and stay. They come from Airbnb or directly because they're familiar with our website. It keeps the water out. It's not insulated yet. So it can get cold, but the amazing thing is, like, it was going to be a warm day outside. But it's a little warmer outside, and we come in, and do you feel it's already much cooler?
Significantly.
So the thermal mass that surrounds the structure is absorbing the heat from this space and keeping it cool.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
bugging. It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid,
culture crushed that stereotype. Here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives. Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap, the name. MC Delight here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time. Sugar Brothers, life with a knife, that is life. Cried, cause he died a trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man, cause that's
self-destruction.
Ready to party, money in your pocket, dying to move your body. To get inside, you pay the whole $10. Got safe with a razor blade, tape to your collar. Leave the guns in the crack and the knobs alone. MC lights on the microphone, bum rushing and pushing, snatching and taxing. I cram and understand why brothers don't be maxing. There's only one disco, they'll close one more. You ain't guarding the door, so what you got a gun for? Do you rob the rich and give to the poor? Yo, daddy-o. School to the more.
Straight from the mouth. And daddy-o. End up in jail, it gotta go. Cause you could do crime and get paid today, and tomorrow you're behind bars in the worst way.
Far from your family,
cause you're locked away.
Now tell me,
do you really think crime pays?
Even on taking what your brother has?
You little sucker, you talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity. Cause if not, then you're with soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed. D-rap race will be lost without a trace or a clue, but what to do is stop the violence and kick the science. Down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is formed and you learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach the East is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid it.
Self-destruction, yeah, for self-destruction.
Ourselves with intellect to revolve, to evolve the self-respect, cause we got to keep ourselves in check, or else it's
self-destruction.
This audio presentation of James Allen as a Man Thinketh is brought to you by AudioEnlightenment.com. Copyright 2011. All rights reserved. As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. Introduction. Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes. The tool of thought in shaping what he wills brings forth a thousand joys, a thousand ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. This little volume, the result of meditation and experience, is not intended as an exhaustive treatise on the much written about subject of the power of thought. It is suggestive rather than explanatory. Its object being to stimulate men and women to the discovery and perception of the truth that they themselves are makers of themselves. by virtues of the thoughts which they choose and encourage, that mind is the master weaver, both of the inner garment of character and the outer garment of circumstance, and that, as they may have hereto woven in ignorance and pain, they may now weave in enlightenment and happiness. James Allen. Chapter 1. Thought and Character. The aphorism, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he," not only embraces the whole of a man's being, but is so comprehensive as to reach out to every condition and circumstance of his life. A man is literally what he thinks, his character being the complete sum of all his thoughts. As the plant springs from and could not be without the seed, so every act of man springs from the hidden seeds of thought and could not have appeared without them. This applies equally to those acts called spontaneous and unpremeditated as to those which are deliberately executed. Act is the blossom of thought, and joy and suffering are its fruit. Thus does a man garner in the sweet and bitter fruitage of his own husbandry. Man is a growth by law, and not a creation by artifice. And cause and effect are as absolute and undeviating in the hidden realm of thought as in the world of visible and material things. A noble and godlike character is not a thing of favor or chance, but is the natural result of continued efforts in right thinking. The effect of long-cherished association with godlike thoughts. An ignoble and bestial character, by the same process, is the result of the continued harboring of groveling thoughts. Man is made or unmade by himself. In the armory of thought, he forges the weapons by which he destroys himself. He also fashions the tools with which he builds for himself heavenly mansions of joy, strength, and peace. By the right choice and true application of thought, man ascends to the divine perfection. By the abuse and wrong application of thought, he descends below the level of the beast. Between these two extremes are all the grades of character, and man is their maker and master. Of all the beautiful thoughts and truths pertaining to the soul which have been restored and brought to light in this age, none is more gladdening or fruitful of divine promise and confidence than this, that man is the master of thought, the molder of character, and the maker and shaper of condition, environment, and destiny. As a being of power, intelligence, and love, and the lord of his own thoughts, man holds keys to every situation and contains within himself that transforming and regenerative agency by which he may make himself what he wills. Man is always the master, even in his weakest and most abandoned state. But in his weakness and degradation, he is a foolish master who misgoverns his household. When he begins to reflect upon his condition and search diligently for the law upon which his being is established, he then becomes the wise master, directing his energies with intelligence and fashioning his thoughts to fruitful issues. Such is the conscious master, and man can only thus become by discovering within himself the laws of thought. This discovery is totally a matter of application, self-analysis, and experience. Only by much searching and mining are gold and diamonds obtained, and man can find every truth connected with his being if he will dig deep into the mine of his soul. That he is the maker of his character, the molder of his life, and the builder of his destiny, he may unerringly prove if he will watch, control, and alter his thoughts, tracing their effects upon himself, upon others, and upon his life and circumstance, linking cause and effect by patient practice and investigation, and utilizing his every experience, even the most trivial everyday occurrence, as a means of obtaining that knowledge of himself, which is understanding, wisdom, power, In this direction is the law of absolute, that he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. For only by patience, practice, and ceaseless importunity can a man enter the door of the temple of knowledge.
There is an eagle who lived in a chicken farm, thinking he was a chicken. One day the eagle saw a massive bird flying in the sky. "I sure would like to fly up there too," said the eagle. The rooster standing nearby said, "Don't be silly. You're just a chicken like the rest of us. We can never fly like that." So the eagle listened to the rooster and died believing it was just a chicken. First off, let me just mention that this isn't a video about positive thinking. If you're the type to think, "Oh, let's think positive and the world will be a better place," that's great, but that's not what we're talking about today. While the book does promote positive thinking, it's a lot more than that. It's about thinking big. This book has taught me a lot. While I'm by no means a millionaire, I've come a long way from the little boy living with his parents a few years ago. If I look back at my journey so far, all of this wouldn't have been possible without the magic of big thinking. The first step to thinking big is to avoid making excuses. How many times have you heard someone say, "I'm too old to do this, I'm not as good as the other guys, blah blah blah." Yeah, you could be too old to be a diaper model, and you could be too short to be a professional basketball player. But you are never too anything to become successful. I used to be a bartender at a restaurant, and I remember this one day, a businessman came into the bar and we had a chat about the economy and business and everything. And I asked him, "You seem like you're really passionate about starting a business. Why don't you?" And he goes, "Oh, I can't. I'm married with kids." If we can blame our inability to become successful on our spouses or children or even the lack of time, even if we didn't have a wife and kids and had as much time in the world, that attitude wouldn't have gotten us anywhere. There's a saying that if you want something done, give it to the busiest person you know. And the truth to that statement is busy people don't make excuses. They get things done. So instead of whining about how disadvantaged we are, we could use our time to improve and actually become better. We really aren't as disadvantaged as we think. There's a saying, "I cried because I had no shoes until I met a man with no feet." The second step to thinking big is to not worry ourselves with trivial things. During Thanksgiving, we had family dinner, and I remember this argument my mom had with my dad. She's like, "Why didn't you defrost the turkey sooner? You were supposed to do it 2 days ago, not yesterday, blah, blah, blah." And this went on for the whole night. I remember one time she brought up an incident that happened 20 years ago and said, "I had to wait for your dad to pick me up for 2 hours. We all know someone who loves to gossip and talk about trivial matters. I'm just going to go on a whim and say that they're not successful. Am I right? People who think big don't have time to focus on petty things. Unless they're famous and have a TV show about their life, they're probably not successful. So the next time you grab a bowl of cereal and find out that someone in your house drank all of the milk, who cares? Eat some bread. The next time you trip over something, fall in a puddle of mud, and tear that expensive shirt you just bought, go read a book or something. Trivial matters are not worth your time. And most important of all, don't underestimate the power of thinking big. When I first saw the title of the book, I really thought the title explained everything. Just think big. Think positive. But after reading the book, I realized that had the concept of thinking big not been explained in hundreds of examples, we wouldn't realize the importance of it. When I first started this channel, I thought, oh, I love these animated videos by Fight Mediocrity. Wouldn't it be nice to do something like that too? And that's exactly how most people think. Oh, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if I was rich? Wouldn't it be nice if I could buy a house and retire early? But wouldn't it be nice won't get us anywhere. And then something happened in my life. I'm a strong believer of being in charge of our destinies. I believe that if someone wants to achieve something, they should have the opportunity to do so. But after visiting a few less developed countries, I realized that it's not the case. If you're born in some parts of the world, no matter how badly you want to be successful, you can't. And it dawned on me that in order to make a difference in this world, I'm going to have to first do something extraordinary. And I won't get there by thinking, oh, wouldn't it be nice? And it was then, and only then, that the quality of my content started to improve. How big we think really plays a part in how big we become. To recap, don't make excuses on why you can't be successful. Don't worry about trivial things. And most of all, don't underestimate the power of big thinking. Since successful people and unsuccessful people look exactly the same on the outside, let me ask you this. How do you, or anyone else for that matter, know that you are not the eagle? I hope you enjoyed it, and if you haven't subscribed yet, you can do it by clicking here. Why? Because every week, my videos get better, and if you enjoyed this, you'll enjoy it even more next week. See you then.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
You'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised with you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're gonna put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
And let me give you the
context for that last video, audio we played from the TV show The Wire, was three people in that conversation, in the room rather. Slim Charles, Avon Barksdale, Avon Barksdale was a real person. In the drug game. This took place in Baltimore, Maryland. And the guy that says he's it's not in him anymore, that was character Dennis Cuddy Wise. People called him Cuddy, primarily on the TV show The Wire. Now, Cuddy, the background on him, Cuddy was basically a soldier in Baltimore street language, is basically an assassin, a street assassin. And he had got hired on, and he had done like a 17-year stretch in prison for killing somebody. He got released from jail, and, of course, he was looking for a way to earn some money. So he went back to gang life. So they hired him on because they knew him. And, of course, once he got hired, he got signed up again to be an assassin. However, for a drug cartel in Baltimore. However, when he had the opportunity to kill somebody, as he said, I was close enough. I had him in my sights, close enough to take off. The guy was wearing a Kango hat. In other words, that this one shot would have blew the hat off the guy, plus destroyed half his head. He didn't take the shot. And I assume that what happened to Cuddy, because once he got released from prison, he did not, although he signed up and got on the payroll to be a street assassin for a drug cartel in Baltimore, Maryland, he never committed another murder. Not one. He had changed his mindset. Now, he had a little struggle, but eventually matter of fact, if we can find it on here, he became a landscaper, started to learn Spanish, then he opened up a neighborhood gym in a disadvantaged part of Baltimore City for the neighborhood kids to teach them how to box. So he started his own business with that gym. Matter of fact, let's give you some more of Cuddy.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug. Got to push it in 3 times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on me, sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day. You're going to be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around. Every day. And your back's going to be yelling at you. Every day. I used to drive an SL. Pretty gold convertible. Nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying, you want to stay on the straight. Ain't going to be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
Rockefellers on the spot.
Man, that's him right there. In that G35, man.
Wearing a retro?
That shit is tight.
$430, it better be.
Hell yeah. I'ma get me one of those motherfuckers.
You must gonna get that Muxie Bowls then. Little mini-me ass gonna be swimming in that sale.
As usual, man, y'all fools are missing my point. That boy came up short on that money last week, and y'all see he out here grinding. So where that money at?
You need to look beyond what he driving and wearing on his back. That boy got a girlfriend?
He went with this little freak up at the high school.
She wearing ice?
She wearing an onion. That's about all I can remember.
Hell yeah.
Yo, check out the girl. High school girl with platinum around her neck. Only one place it came from.
Give my man this thing. Fig sour. That ain't no Larkin, dog.
Used to revolvers, man. 38 don't jam.
Don't hold 15 neither.
Game done changed.
Game the same. Just got more feds.
As Cuddy had the opportunities, they gave him a gun, but he never used it. Essentially, and that goes to our title of our podcast today, mindset is everything. Now, we've been talking about for the last week, you know, how to pay off $300,000 debt, $30,000 debt, $20,000 debt, $25,000 debt. And the first step into tackling any of that is you have to change your mindset. Now, part of that mindset, it'll be easier because we're talking about not borrowing any money. We're talking about you have to, I mean, you, basically this world comes down to two primary people. Producers, people who produce things like, you know, your socks, your shoes, your, what do you, whatever you eat, and just anything you buy, okay. Which is consumption. So you got your producers, and everybody consumes something. But you have people, you have a class of people that are producers, and then you have another group of people that they consume. They consume. That's what they do. So but the first step, matter of fact, to go from an F student to an A student, which can be achieved by anybody who's in the school, you basically have to change your mindset first. Now, and keeping in line with, we're going to use a figure today, $5,000 is, and we'll throw out a scripture, mindset is everything, is Habakkuk 2:2, I'm paraphrasing. Write the vision and make it plain. Now, the vision that we're putting out here today is, and we'll be taking up on people's, I call them cases. So if you got an amount of money that you need to raise, earn, what have you, let us know. And let us reverse engineer it right here on this live stream and come up with strategies on how to, you know, come up with that money. So in any event, our daily affirmation or our vision is to earn $5,000 to $25,000 per day income building and selling tiny houses. All right, so now we're restricting this right now to the figure of $5,000. So because if we do 5,000 times 5 days in the week, that's $25,000 a week, $100,000 a month. All right, so but we're scaling it down to $5,000 per day. So step one, and just in my opinion, you can do it differently. All right, based on get a piece of paper, write it down, and a simple affirmation, I am now earning $5,000 per day, and then now you can complete that sentence by earning $5,000 a day doing what? I once ran into some contractors, HVAC, they install heating and, you know, air, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. It was a team of five. And with the team of five, they, during certain times of the year, they would install five AC units a day. Five AC units a day. And on average, the average job, they would make $5,000. They would come to a job site in the morning and, you know, five of them, and then three of them would unload the unit, get it in place. Then those three would leave to go pick up another unit to go prepare for the next job, and the other two would, you know, complete the installation, and then they would go on to the next job. And they did five of those, so I met $5,000. They were earning $25,000 per day. That's how they did it. All right. There are people that, and it doesn't matter what you do. People do it with cupcakes, toilet paper. So whatever it is, but you pick, but write out an affirmation. Write out a simple one-sentence affirmation. So in our case, we're earning $5,000 per day, you know, building and selling tiny houses. All right. Next thing after that is, and these are just suggestions, you do what you want to do. You have to have $5,000 daily habits. Now, before we get to that, you need a $5,000 per day business model. You need a $5,000 a day business model. And then once you have that business model, the business model will basically dictate what steps you need to take or what daily $5,000 a day daily habits that you need to take. What steps do you need to take in order to generate this? Now, for instance, there's a guy, you've heard me mention him on this program before, Randy Jones. Randy Jones has a tiny house company out of Eastern Tennessee. They build 3 to 5 tiny houses a day, Monday through Friday. And he typically has a team of 7 that can build from scratch at least 1 tiny house per day. And those tiny houses sell on a low end, let's say for $25,000. All right, so on a day where they just built 3, you know, that's $60,000 gross revenue for those 3. So in any event, a $5,000 per day daily business model, within that, what are the daily habits, action steps that you must take in order to reach that goal of $5,000 per day? Typically, you're going to have a team. This is nothing that you're going to do by yourself. Going back to Randy Jones, Randy Jones has a team of 7 that can build a tiny house in a day. All right? And he's trained up to 5 teams, because some days they build 5 in a day. So 7 times 5 is 35. So a team of 35 people, 7 to each house, and that's how he's able to. He can't pull that off by himself. And he started off by himself, though. He built the first one by himself. But as his orders picked up, you know, he had to train other people on, you know, how to you know, build. So, but he rarely builds anything himself. He runs the company now that he started off by himself. But you're going to have a team. All right. Once again, it doesn't have to be, it can be anything. It can be a lemonade stand. But you're going to have a team if you want to reach this amount we're talking about. Now, since we're in the age of what I call mass communication, electronic media, a lot of people are very successful at selling things with live streams. If you go on Facebook Live and just look around the world, there's several people that I've run across that they're selling, what do you call those things? Flea markets. You know, they're selling old clothes and old knickknacks out of their apartment or house. They're selling it on Facebook Marketplace right at home. You know, they set it up and you look at it and then you pick what you want and you order it and then they'll mail it out to you. Set up a live stream, you know, how you can make $5,000 a day doing that. And then you can go on YouTube and they upload videos, but I don't know how often they upload videos. I imagine hundreds, if not thousands of videos get uploaded to YouTube. And we're talking about how to, by the minute, if not by the hour, you know. That's just a rough idea. I have these in my program notes right here on Blog Talk Radio. But mindset, it all starts with mindset. A lot of people panic. They don't know what to do. And then they get frozen with fear because they don't know what to do. All starts with mindset. Get your mind right first. And then go from there. Let's play this audio right here.
Brother, break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And
some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos, DVD, CD, Masterpiece, Charlie's Angels.
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least 3. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? P, look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money. Right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, P. I'ma be a seller. I'ma get my own business. Change the game.
Now, that clip was from the movie Baby Boy. And for me, that 2-minute and 15-second piece, for me personally, was the best part of the movie because, and we're about to play it again, it really does come down to that. No matter what country that you're in, no matter what form of government in that country, it comes down to this world is made up of two types of people, buyers and sellers. Which one are you going to be? Another one, and this is all part of the mindset. Mindset is everything. Some people have, and you can you can size up a person by their language. You can size up a person by their language. Do they have a consumer mind? You know, is their language consumer based? You know, I want to buy this, I want to buy that. You know, or are they merchant based? Are they selling something? That's what they do. But you can size a person up by their language. Also, I think an interesting thing that you might want to do for this is an individual thing he also mentioned. You know, how many millionaires and in these days, how many matter of fact, here's a little exercise that you can do right now. Count, provided that you have clothes on. Okay. Count how many millionaires / billionaires are you wearing? You know, you got on shoes? Well, who sold you the shoes? Matter of fact, let's do this right now. Let's go from the bottom up. All right. Now, let's see. I'm wearing a pair of shoes out of China, but there's no particular label on it. They were made in China, but I bought it from Amazon. So let's look at Amazon, and let's look at their numbers here. Jeff Bezos' company, which was founded in 1994 in Bellevue, Washington. And let's see. Now, so I got some billionaires on my feet. All right. It's a Chinese company, but I ordered it. Matter of fact, let me take off my shoe. All right. It says comfort and soft, made in China. We're going to look them up in a moment. But I ordered it through Amazon. So Amazon, they had a revenue of $574.8 billion last year. All right, now, let's see. Comfort and Soft. Let me see if there's a company by that name. Is that that's what's inside the shoe? Comfort. So I ordered through a billionaire, and Soft. Oh, Comfort and Soft shoes. Hold on, let me do this again. Okay, Comfort and Soft shoes. They do have a website. Now, Jeff Bezos didn't start off a billionaire or even a millionaire, but he adjusted his mindset accordingly. So if Jeff Bezos can do it, you can do it if you want to do it. All right, Comfort and Soft, I'm trying to find out info about us. Okay, confidence. I'm trying to find out. Oh, they got a website. Let's see. Confidence. Let's see if they have a. Comfort and Soft shoes revenue. Okay, well, we don't break it down, but let's see. How much is the shoe industry worth? Although that's not the answer I'm looking for, but okay. Over 47 billion, according to Yahoo Finance. All right, so, but do the same for yourself. Shoes, socks, how many millionaires / billionaires are you wearing? Okay, so, it all starts with mindset. All right, so let's take a little tiny baby step. How much money are you trying to raise, or are you trying to help somebody to raise? Now, for some it could be, and you can adjust these figures the way you want. I've got $5,000 on my affirmations, but some people, I mean, if you do $1,000 a day, and it'll give you $20,000 a month. You know, $500 a day, it goes accordingly. So remember, just Habakkuk 2:2, write the vision and then make it plain. Write the vision and make it plain. One more time for baby boy once again. And this is a great observation thing, because you'll see, I mean, then I think your mind will be different once you start looking at how many millionaires or billionaires are you wearing. And then look, you'll notice things all around you. So you're surrounded by abundance. Now you just have to figure out a way by changing your mindset on how to become more of a seller or a merchant.
Brother, break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we
some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life. For I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos, DVD, CD, Masterpiece, Charlie's Angel.
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least 3. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? P, look around, man. See what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money. Right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke ass people playing catch up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm gonna be a seller. I'm gonna get my own business. Change the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you ain't gonna say nothing on it?
What is there to say?
Avon, this is blood. Family.
I know it.
And I'm telling you that someone may have done this to us, Avon. To our family.
The cop's just saying that shit.
To mess with your head.
Exactly.
Why? That cop don't know me for shit. What the hell am I to him?
He know you gonna wanna think this thing that D, you know, he wouldn't do what he did.
I do think it. Was it some beef he had? Someone on the inside? That cop said it was someone who didn't want you to know. And so they made it look like it did.
Nobody did nothing.
But the cop said...
He's lying. He paid to lie.
Avon, you are my brother. I need to know this more than anything. Dee did not roll on us. He came to the edge, but he turned around and walked away. And I know he was willing to do what he had to for his family, for us. But I need to know that you know that. That you saw him that way.
What? What are you trying to say?
If something happened...
The fuck are you even thinking? That I had something to do with it? I could do that to my own kin? Is that what you fucking think? The fuck is in your head? I ain't do nothing to D. I ain't had shit to do with it.
To do with what? To do with what?
Whatever happened. Whatever it is that happened, Brianna.
Another scene from the TV show The Wire. And what, actually, that whole show, you'll see some people that got out of the drug game, but they had to change that mindset first. They had to change the mindset first. All right, so here's what I want to do. We have it in our library, but I forgot what I put it under. Go to YouTube and type in the YouTube search engine, The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. I have it here in my library, but I must have listed it under another name other than what I just told you. But go check it out, The Strangest Secret, which basically says you become what you think about. As you listen to it, write out, because it's still early in the year, we're in February 2024, write out in one sentence. Not two, but in one sentence, and it could be a long sentence, though. Write out one sentence, an income goal that you might want to. Now, it could be income or it might be a debt that you want to erase. All right. And based on Rebecca 2-2, write the vision. Try to make it one sentence, make it plain. And then recite it 2-3 times a day. Now, tomorrow what we're going to do is we're going to go through specific daily habits based on what we're doing that you're welcome to join us, a copy office, or mile us, or whatever. But what are the action steps that you need to take? Because it's one thing just, you know, a verbal affirmation is one thing. But you got to have the action steps to it. So tomorrow we're going to go through the daily action steps that one must take. On that note, let's see, because I can't find the – well, you know what? We're not going to sign off just yet. I'm going to see if I can find – because I know I have it here in this library. So listen to this while we search again for this Stranger Secret by Earl Nightingale.
told you a little while ago, these leaders that they call leaders, this included Lena Horne, this included Dick Gregory, and this included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and or over the black community by the white community and have been made celebrities and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear. And it is an honor, actually, that they endorsed Dr. Martin Luther King and were against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's actually an honor. Now, when you say that they also, in the same Newsweek poll magazine, I think the pollster said that he went into the Negro community and asked about the Muslims. And many Negroes whom he asked said, well, I never heard of the Muslims. Who are they? You know,
this is the rank and file we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Now, when they got down to the rank and file, this was the answers that they got. This is the equivalent to the situation in Kenya during the Mau Mau uprising when many frightened whites in Kenya, Africa, would go among the Africans and ask them, what about the Mau Mau? And the African would say, I never heard of them. And the same white man who would ask the African this question and very naively believe what the African said, when he went to bed that night, he would lose his head. And usually the one who took his head was the same African who told him that afternoon he had never heard of the Mau Mau.
Except in the Newsweek poll, they used Negro interviewers.
You'll find that oftentimes Negroes are as much on guard around Negro interviewers who usually represent the bourgeois element of Negroes as they are on guard around whites. Usually Negroes know that when this bourgeois Negro walks through the door, he is not doing something that he's initiated himself, but he's involved in something in which the white man is the absolute author of and has sent him to the Negro community for some information. And when they give that Negro some information, usually they give him the information that they want the white want him to take back to the white man, because that's who he's going to take it back to.
Okay, you know what? I cannot find. Well, hopefully I didn't delete it. Well, I can always add it back. But anyway, check out the Stranger Secret video on YouTube by Earl Nightingale. I'm going to have to add it back in here. I swore I had it in here. You know what? Wait a minute. I can't give up on it because that's a classic video. Audio I want you guys to hear. And it has a lot to do with... Okay, let's see. I'm going to look for it again. Don't go anywhere.
Permit me to assist you across the road.
Well, I was only going to the palace, actually. Doorman a cab, if you please.
Allow me the privilege to escort you in my own carriage.
You are too kind.
I'd do anything for you, dear. Anything for you, me. Everything to me. I know that I'd go anywhere for your smile. Anywhere for your smile. Everywhere I'd be.
Would you climb a hill?
Anything.
Wear a daffodil?
Anything.
Leave me all your will?
Anything.
Even fight my bill?
What fisticuffs I'd risk? Everything for one kiss. Everything, yes I'd do. Anything.
Anything.
Anything for you. Thank you.
for you, dear. Anything for you mean everything to me. I know that I'd go anywhere for your smile. Anywhere for your smile. Everywhere I'd see. Would you lace my shoes?
Anything.
Paint your face bright blue.
Anything.
Catch a kangaroo.
Anything.
Go to Timbuktu.
And back again. I'd risk everything for one kiss. Everything. Yes, I'd do anything.
Anything.
Anything for you.
The reason I came to this area is because no building restrictions whatsoever. That's really hard to find in this country. There's just no building restrictions out here, in South Brewster County, which is pretty miraculous, actually, because the population is really tiny out here. It's cheap to live out here as well. I started with a 40-acre tract. It was $8,000. And the 20-acre tract I bought south of me was $500. I came out here to get away from debt. I was deep in debt, and the mortgage on the house I had was pretty steep. I was going to become a statistic if I wasn't careful, and luckily I was able to sell the place and walk away with a chunk of change to go somewhere and start simple. Yeah, I got this doghouse for my chickens, hoping they'd start going in there, and they're sort of spending some time in there, but they sleep all night right on my porch in front of my door. Hey, chickens.
So, nothing. Is this your house? Or
this is my house. All 128 square feet of it. When I first moved out here almost 7 years ago, I was a set builder in New York City for a number of years, and I used those skills to build the basic box of my house in a week and put it together and moved in. And that took 3 months to do all the finish work with the second roof and the metal siding and the interior. One of the tricky things out here is shade, of course. I did this sort of double roof thing on my house. Now, there's actually an insulated waterproof cover on the top of my box of a building that I live in, and then I've got a foot above that is this other metal roof that adds shade. Air can pass through there and help suck any heat off of it. And it really makes a big difference as far as not cooking yourself in the summertime out here. So this is my outdoor shower. It had a door on it, but it blew off in the last storm. We get some pretty heavy winds out here, and my door blows off usually twice a season, and I haven't rebuilt it yet. So, which out here doesn't really matter if you have a door or not.
And how does it work?
Well, there's a tank on top, there's an insulated box on top, and there's glass on the south side and on the top of it, insulated glass. And it's just an old steel tank from a hot water heater. And I manually fill it. I climb the ladder here and fill it because I don't use that much water out of here. This panel on the side here is a thermal siphon, which basically helps heat it up faster in the wintertime. It's disconnected right now, so it's not really doing anything. But when the sun's lower in the winter and it beats down on this panel here, this gets really hot, and it naturally cycles the water without any pumps or anything, hotter and hotter inside the tank. In the summertime, you never take a shower at the end of the day because the water's way too hot. You wait till the first thing in the morning. Of course, out here, when you live by yourself, you don't have to shower that often because if there's no one to smell you, do you really stink? When I first moved out here, the cheapest deal on solar panels, there's 45 watts of solar. Three of these panels was one set. That was about $4.50 a watt. Now, solar you can get for under $1 a watt. These run my lights and my swamp cooler. It's such a tiny house, I have a fan running 24 hours a day in the house just to circulate air through there. I left my house in upstate New York when I moved out here. That house was 2,800 square feet, so I've gone from 2,800 to 128. My house in upstate New York, it was a big farmhouse built in 1845. There was an upstairs bathroom and a downstairs bathroom. There were four bedrooms upstairs. Now I used 10% of the house most of the time. I had to buy all this furniture just to put stuff in each of these rooms that I never went into. So you're in the foyer and the kitchen right now. Then we have a long hallway, and there's a bedroom on the right and an office, living room, dining room on the left.
Wow.
And, you know, it's funny. I lived in Manhattan for maybe 12 years, and I never had an apartment anywhere this small when I lived in Manhattan. I always had, I think the smallest was 350 square feet, so this is 128 square feet. Of course, in Manhattan, this would probably cost you $1,000 a month in rent for something this size. I cook down here. There's a propane tank under the counter, and it's just a regular burner thing. You turn it on, you have to light it with a match. And I have a solar oven I use occasionally as well, but simple stuff like soups and pasta and stuff I just cook in here on this little propane grill top. Everything's so simple here. You know, I was busting my ass 7 days a week just to pay all the bills for all the stuff I had. And now it's pared down to one room. I've got a huge yard, you know, with all this land. I can't see another house from my property, which is another big plus. There's very little stress out here. The only time I get stressed out here is when there's a big storm, because storms are scary out here in the desert. You know,
What do you do for refrigeration?
I've got a chest freezer that's regular 110 volt AC. I run it off my solar stuff. I just use it as a refrigerator. As long as you keep it packed full of stuff, it doesn't take much to keep it cold.
Yeah,
we got our cheese in here. With a chest style, you open the lid, all the cold doesn't come pouring out. So I just turn it on for maybe an hour a day and then turn it off, and then it keeps everything cold. I can even make ice if I turn it on for 4 hours and pack some stuff in the bottom. It'll ice it up. So it works. Yeah. Works good enough.
Yeah.
It's funny, I built these cabinets originally and didn't have doors on them, and then I started chucking all my stuff into them, and I thought, I don't want to look at all that stuff. So I spent like a week making all these doors and sealing everything up, and it's just OSB stuff, board, oriented strand board. It's like plywood, basically. It's cheap plywood. This is my favorite one right here. This is my ammo cabinet. Being in New York City, I was never much of a gun person, of course, but when I came out here, you know, a 911 call is maybe 45 minutes before somebody calls you back to make sure there's an emergency, and then another 45 before they get here, so I have 8 guns now and a bunch of bullets and stuff, but everything, it's all OSB.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's insulation in the walls and in the ceiling. This has held up pretty good inside. You know, this is almost 7 years old that I've been in here. So when I moved out here, I knew I could get my phone line brought out to me, but I wasn't sure about the DSL, and I was close enough to still get that as well. So I have a landline and DSL. You know, people will correspond with me and say, it sure looks lonely out there. Isn't that a lonely place? And I say, well, places aren't lonely. Only people are lonely. It's funny, when I was a little kid, I used to think that when I grew up, I was going to be a hermit. And then I moved to upstate New York, buy this giant house, because I think that's part of the American dream, and then discover it's going to kill me to try to pay for this. There's no way I can afford it. So I sell that, and I come out here and start from scratch with this space, and it's kind of like I think I'm fulfilling that prophecy of the hermit thing.
I'd like to tell you about the strangest secret in the world. Some years ago, the late Nobel Prize-winning Dr. Albert Schweitzer was being interviewed in London, and a reporter asked him, Doctor, what's wrong with men today? And the great doctor was silent a moment, and then he said, men simply don't think. It's about this that I want to talk with you. We live today in a golden age. This is an era that man has looked forward to, dreamed of, and worked toward for thousands of years. But since it's here, we pretty well take it for granted. We in America are particularly fortunate to live in the richest land that ever existed on the face of the earth, a land of abundant opportunity for everyone. But do you know what happens? Well, let's take 100 men who start even at the age of 25. Do you have any idea what will happen to those men by the time they're 65? These 100 men who all start even at the age of 25 believe they're going to be successful. If you ask any one of these men if he wanted to be a success, he'd tell you he did. And you'd notice that he was eager toward life, that there was a certain sparkle to his eye, an erectness to his carriage, and life seemed like a pretty interesting adventure to him. But by the time they're 65, one will be rich. Four will be financially independent. Five will still be working. 54 will be broke. Now think a moment. Out of the 100, only 5 make the grade. Now why do so many fail? What has happened to the sparkle that was there when they were 25? What's become of the dreams, the hopes, the plans? And why is there such a large disparity between what these men intended to do and what they actually accomplished? When we say about 5% achieve success, we have to define success. And here's the best definition I've ever been able to find. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. If a man is working toward a predetermined goal and knows where he's going, that man is a success. If he's not doing that, he's a failure. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. Rollo May, the distinguished psychiatrist, wrote a wonderful book called Man's Search for Himself. And in this book, he says, the opposite of courage in our society is not cowardice. It is conformity. And there you have the trouble today. It's conformity, people acting like everyone else without knowing why, without knowing where they're going. Now think of it. In America right now, there are over 18 million people 65 years of age and older. And most of them are broke. They're dependent on someone else for life's necessities. Now we learn to read by the time we're 7. We learn to make a living by the time we're 25. Usually by that time we're not only making a living, we're supporting a family. And yet by the time we're 65, we haven't learned how to become financially independent in the richest land that has ever been known. Why? We conform. And the trouble is that we're acting like the wrong percentage group, the 95 who don't succeed. Now why do these people conform? Well, they really don't know. These people believe that their lives are shaped by circumstances, by things that happen to them, by exterior forces. They're outer-directed people. A survey was made one time that covered a lot of men, working men, and these men were asked, why do you work? Why do you get up in the morning? 19 out of 20 had no idea. If you ask them, they'll say, well, everyone goes to work in the morning, and that's the reason they do it, because everyone else is doing it. Now, let's get back to our definition of success. Who succeeds? The only person who succeeds is the person who is progressively realizing a worthy ideal. He's the person who says, I'm going to become this, and then begins to work toward that goal. I'll tell you who the successful people are. A success is the school teacher who's teaching school because that's what he or she wants to do. The success is the woman who's a wife and mother because she wanted to become a wife and mother and is doing a good job of it. The success is the man who runs the corner gas station because that was his dream. That's what he wanted to do. The success is the successful salesman who wants to become a top-notch salesman and grow and build with his organization. A success is anyone who is doing deliberately a predetermined job because that's what he decided to do deliberately. But only 1 out of 20 does that. That's why today there isn't really any competition unless we make it for ourselves. Instead of competing, all we have to do is create. You know, for 20 years, I looked for the key which would determine what would happen to a human being. Was there a key I wanted to know which would make the future a promise that we could foretell to a large extent? Was there a key that would guarantee a person's becoming successful if he only knew about it and knew how to use it? Well, there is such a key, and I've found it. Have you ever wondered why so many men work so hard and honestly without ever achieving anything in particular, and others don't seem to work hard and yet seem to get everything? They seem to have the magic touch. You've heard them say that about someone. Everything he touches turns to gold. And have you ever noticed that a man who becomes successful tends to continue to become successful? And on the other hand, have you noticed how a man who's a failure tends to continue to fail? Well, it's because of goals. Some of us have goals, some don't. People with goals succeed because they know where they're going. It's that simple. Think of a ship leaving a harbor, and think of it with the complete voyage mapped out and planned. The captain and crew know exactly where it's going and how long it'll take. It has a definite goal. Now, 9,999 times out of 10,000, it will get to where it started out to get. Now, let's take another ship, just like the first, only let's not put a crew on it or a captain at the helm. Let's give it no aiming point, no goal, no destination. We just start the engines and let it go. I think you'll agree with me that if it gets out of the harbor at all, it will either sink or wind up on some deserted beach or derelict. It can't go anyplace because it has no destination and no guidance, and it's the same with a human being. Take the salesman, for example. There's no other person in the world today with the future of a good salesman. Selling is the world's highest paid profession, if we're good at it and if we know where we're going. Every company needs top-notch salesmen, and they reward those men. The sky's the limit for them. But how many can you find? Someone once said the human race is fixed, not to prevent the strong from winning, but to prevent the weak from losing. The American economy today can be likened to a convoy in time of war. The entire economy is slowed down to protect its weakest link, just as the convoy had to go at the speed that would permit its slowest vessel to remain in formation. That's why it's so easy to make a living today. It takes no particular brains or talent to make a living and support a family today. So we have a plateau of so-called security, if that's what a person's looking for. But we do have to decide how high above this plateau we want to aim. Now let's get back to the strangest secret in the world, the story that I wanted to tell you today. Why do men with goals succeed in life and men without them fail? Well, let me tell you something which, if you really understand it, will alter your life immediately. If you understand completely what I'm going to tell you from this moment on, your life will never be the same again. You will suddenly find that good luck just seems to be attracted to you. The things you want just seem to fall in line, and from now on you won't have the problems, the worries, the gnawing lump of anxiety that perhaps you've experienced before. Doubt, fear, well, they'll be things of the past. Here's the key to success and the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now, let me say that again. We become what we think about. Throughout all history, the great wise men and teachers, philosophers and prophets have disagreed with one another on many different things. It's only on this one point that they are in complete and unanimous agreement. Listen to what Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman emperor, said. A man's life is what his thoughts make of it. Disraeli said this. Everything comes if a man will only wait. I've brought myself by long meditation to the conviction that a human being with a settled purpose must accomplish it, and that nothing can resist a will that will stake even existence for its fulfillment. Ralph Waldo Emerson said this, a man is what he thinks about all day long. William James said, the greatest discovery of my generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind. And he also said, we need only in cold blood act as if the thing in question were real, and it will become infallibly real by growing into such a connection with our life that it will become real. It will become so knit with habit and emotion that our interests in it will be those which characterize belief. And he also said, if you only care enough for a result, you will almost certainly attain it. If you wish to be rich, you will be rich. If you wish to be learned, you will be learned. If you wish to be good, you'll be good. Only you must then really wish these things and wish them exclusively and not wish at the same time 100 other incompatible things just as strongly. In the Bible, you read in Mark 9:23, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. My old friend Dr. Norman Vincent Peale put it this way. This is one of the greatest laws in the universe. Fervently do I wish I had discovered it as a very young man. It dawned upon me much later in life, and I found it to be one of the greatest, if not my greatest discovery outside of my relationship to God. The great law, briefly and simply stated, is that if you think in negative terms, you will get negative results. If you think in positive terms, you will achieve positive results. That is the simple fact, he went on to say, which is at the basis of an astonishing law of prosperity and success. In three words, believe and succeed. William Shakespeare put it this way, our doubts are traitors and make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt. George Bernard Shaw said, people are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, make them. Well, it's pretty apparent, isn't it? And every person who discovered this for a while believed that he was the first one to work it out. We become what we think about. Now, it stands to reason that a person who's thinking about a concrete and worthwhile goal is going to reach it, because that's what he's thinking about, and we become what we think about. Conversely, the man who has no goal, who doesn't know where he's going, and whose thoughts must therefore be thoughts of confusion and anxiety and fear and worry, becomes what he thinks about. His life becomes one of frustration and fear and anxiety and worry. And if he thinks about nothing, he becomes nothing. Now, how does it work? Why do we become what we think about? Well, I'll tell you how it works as far as we know. Now, to do this, I want to tell you about a situation that parallels the human mind. Suppose a farmer has some land, and it's good, fertile land. Now, the land gives the farmer a choice. He may plant in that land whatever he chooses. The land doesn't care. It's up to the farmer to make the decision. Now, remember, we're comparing the human mind with the land because the mind, like the land, doesn't care what you plant in it. It will return what you plant, but it doesn't care what you plant. Now, let's say that the farmer has two seeds in his hand. One is a seed of corn. The other is nightshade, a deadly poison. He digs two little holes in the earth, and he plants both seeds, one corn, the other nightshade. He covers up the holes, waters, and takes care of the land, and what will happen? Invariably, the land will return what's planted. As it's written in the Bible, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Now, remember, the land doesn't care. It'll return poison in just as wonderful abundance as it will corn. So up come the two plants, one corn, one poison. Now, the human mind is far more fertile, far more incredible and mysterious than the land, but it works the same way. It doesn't care what we plant. Success, failure. A concrete, worthwhile goal, or confusion. Misunderstanding, fear, anxiety, and so on. But what we plant, it must return to us. You see, the human mind is the last great unexplored continent on earth. It contains riches beyond our wildest dreams. It will return anything we want to plant. Now, you might say, well, if that's true, why don't people use their minds more? Well, I think they've figured out an answer to that one, too. Our mind comes as standard equipment at birth. It's free, and things that are given to us for nothing, we place little value on. Things that we pay money for, we value. The paradox is that exactly the reverse is true. Everything that's really worthwhile in life came to us free. Our minds, our souls, our bodies, our hopes, our dreams, our ambitions, our intelligence, our love of family and children and friends and country, all these priceless possessions are free. But the things that cost us money are actually very cheap and can be replaced at any time. A good man can be completely wiped out and make another fortune. He can do that several times. Even if our home burns down, we can rebuild it. But the things we got for nothing, we can never replace. The human mind isn't used because we take it for granted. Familiarity breeds contempt. It can do any kind of job we assign to it, but generally speaking, we use it for little jobs instead of big, important ones. Universities have proved that most of us are operating on about 10% or less of our abilities. So decide now, what is it you want? Plant your goal in your mind. It's the most important decision you ever make in your entire life. What is it you want? Do you want to be an outstanding salesman? A better worker at your particular job? Do you want to go places in your company? In your community? Do you want to get rich? All you've got to do is plant that seed in your mind, care for it, work steadily toward your goal, and it will become a reality. It not only will, there's no way that it cannot. You see, that's a law, like the laws of Sir Isaac Newton, the laws of gravity. If you get on top of a building and jump off, you'll always go down. You'll never go up. And it's the same with all the other laws of nature. They always work. They're inflexible. Think about your goal in a relaxed, positive way. Picture yourself in your mind's eye as having already achieved this goal. See yourself doing the things you will be doing when you've reached your goal. Ours has been called the phenobarbital age, the age of ulcers and nervous breakdowns and tranquilizers, at a time when medical research has raised us to a new plateau of good health and longevity. Far too many of us worry ourselves into an early grave, trying to cope with things in our own little personal ways, without learning a few great laws that will take care of everything for us. These things we bring on ourselves through our habitual way of thinking. Every one of us is the sum total of his own thoughts. He is where he is because that's exactly where he really wants to be, whether he'll admit that or not. Each of us must live off the fruit of his thoughts in the future, because what you think today and tomorrow, next month and next year, will mold your life and determine your future. You're guided by your mind. I remember one time I was driving through eastern Arizona, and I saw one of those giant earth-moving machines roaring along the road at about 35 miles an hour with what looked like 30 tons of dirt in it. A tremendous, incredible machine, and there was a little man perched way up on top with the wheel in his hands guiding it. And as I drove along, I was struck by the similarity of that machine to the human mind. Just suppose you're sitting at the controls of such a vast source of energy. Are you going to sit back and fold your arms and let it run itself into a ditch? Or are you going to keep both hands firmly on the wheel and control and direct this power to a specific, worthwhile purpose? It's up to you. You're in the driver's seat. You see, the very law that gives us success is a two-edged sword. We must control our thinking. The same rule that can lead a man to a life of success, wealth, happiness, and all the things he ever dreamed of for himself and his family. That very same law can lead him into the gutter. It's all in how he uses it, for good or for bad. This is the strangest secret in the world. Now, why do I say it's strange, and why do I call it a secret? Actually, it isn't a secret at all. It was first promulgated by some of the earliest wise men, and it appears again and again throughout the Bible, but very few people have learned it, understand it. That's why it's strange, and why, for some equally strange reason, it virtually remains a secret. I believe that you could go out and walk down the main street of your town and ask one man after another what the secret of success is, and you probably wouldn't run into one man in a month who could tell you. Now, this information is enormously valuable to us if we really understand it and apply it. It's valuable to us not only for our own lives, but the lives of those around us, our families, employees, associates, and friends. Life should be an exciting adventure. It should never be a bore. A man should live fully. Be alive. He should be glad to get out of bed in the morning. He should be doing a job he likes to do because he does it well. One time I heard Grove Patterson, the great late editor-in-chief of the Toledo Daily Blade, make a speech. And as he concluded his speech, he said something I've never forgotten. He said, "My years in the newspaper business have convinced me of several things. Among them, that people are basically good, and that we came from someplace and we're going someplace. So we should make our time here an exciting adventure. The architect of the universe didn't build a stairway leading nowhere." And the greatest teacher of all, the carpenter from the plains of Galilee, gave us the secret time and time again. "As ye believe, so shall it be done unto you." I've explained the strangest secret in the world and how it works. Now, on this side, I want to explain how you can prove to yourself the enormous returns possible in your own life by putting this secret to a practical test. I want you to make a test that will last 30 days. It isn't going to be easy, but if you'll give it a good try, it will completely change your life for the better. Now, back in the 17th century, Sir Isaac Newton, the English mathematician and natural philosopher, gave us some natural laws of physics which apply as much to human beings as they do to the movement of bodies in the universe. And one of these laws is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Simply stated, as it applies to you and me, it means we can achieve nothing without paying the price. The results of your 30-day experiment will be in direct proportion to the effort you put forth. To be a doctor, you must pay the price of long years of difficult study. to be successful in selling, and remember that each of us succeeds to the extent of his ability to sell. Selling our families on our ideas, selling education in schools, selling our children on the advantages of living the good and honest life, selling our associates and employees on the importance of being exceptional people, to, of course, the profession of selling itself. But to be successful in selling our way to the good life, we must be willing to pay the price. Now, what is that price? Well, it's many things. First, it's understanding emotionally, as well as intellectually, that we literally become what we think about, that we must control our thoughts if we're to control our lives. It's understanding fully that, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Second, it's cutting away all fetters from the mind and permitting it to soar as it was divinely designed to do. It's the realization that your limitations are self-imposed and that the opportunities for you today are enormous beyond belief. It's rising above narrow-minded pettiness and prejudice. And third, it's using all your courage to force yourself to think positively on your own problem, to set a definite and clearly defined goal for yourself, to let your marvelous mind think about your goal from all possible angles, to let your imagination speculate freely upon many different possible solutions, to refuse to believe that there are any circumstances sufficiently strong to defeat you in the accomplishment of your purpose, to act promptly and decisively when your course is clear, and to keep constantly aware of the fact that you are, at this moment, standing in the middle of your own acres of diamonds, as Russell Conwell used to point out. And fourth, save at least 10% of every dollar you earn. It's also remembering that no matter what your present job, it has enormous possibilities if you're willing to pay the price. Now let's just go over the important points in the price each of us must pay to achieve the wonderful life that can be ours. It is, of course, worth any price. One, you will become what you think about. Two, remember the word imagination and let your mind begin to soar. Three, courage. Concentrate on your goal every day. Four, save 10% of what you earn. And five, action. Ideas are worthless unless we act on them. Now, I'll try to outline the 30-day test I want you to make. Keep in mind that you have nothing to lose by making this test and everything you could possibly want to gain. There are two things that may be said of everyone. Each of us wants something, and each of us is afraid of something. I want you to write on a card what it is you want more than anything else. It may be more money. Perhaps you'd like to double your income or make a specific amount of money. It may be a beautiful home. It may be success at your job. It may be a particular position in life. It could be a more harmonious family. Each of us wants something. Now write down on your card specifically what it is you want. Make sure it's a single goal and clearly defined. You needn't show it to anyone, but carry it with you so that you can look at it several times a day. Think about it in a cheerful, relaxed, positive way each morning when you get up. And immediately you have something to work for, something to get out of bed for, something to live for. Look at it every chance you get during the day and just before going to bed at night. And as you look at it, remember that you must become what you think about, and since you're thinking about your goal, you realize that soon it will be yours. In fact, it's yours really the moment you write it down and begin to think about it. Look at the abundance all around you as you go about your daily business. You have as much right to this abundance as any other living creature. It's yours for the asking. Now we come to the difficult part. Difficult because it means the formation of what is probably a brand new habit, and new habits are not easily formed. Once formed, however, it will follow you for the rest of your life. Stop thinking about what it is you fear. Each time a fearful or negative thought comes into your consciousness, replace it with a mental picture of your positive and worthwhile goal. And there will come times when you'll feel like giving up. It's easier for a human being to think negatively than positively. That's why only 5% are successful. You must begin now to place yourself in that group. For 30 days, you must take control of your mind. It will think about only what you permit it to think about. Each day for this 30-day test, do more than you have to do. In addition to maintaining a cheerful, positive outlook, give of yourself more than you've ever done before. Do this knowing that your returns in life must be in direct proportion to what you give. The moment you decide on a goal to work toward, you're immediately a successful person. You are then in that rare and successful category of people who know where they're going. Out of every 100 people, you belong to the top 5. Don't concern yourself too much with how you're going to achieve your goal. Leave that completely to a power greater than yourself. All you have to do is know where you're going. The answers will come to you of their own accord and at the right time. Remember these words from the Sermon on the Mount, and remember them well. keep them constantly before you this month of your test. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth, and to him that knocketh, it shall be opened. It's as marvelous and as simple as that. In fact, it's so simple that in our seemingly complicated world, it's difficult for an adult to understand it. All he needs is a purpose and faith. For 30 days, do your very best. If you're a salesman, go at it as you've never done before. Not in a hectic fashion, but with the calm, cheerful assurance that time well spent will give you the abundance in return you deserve and want. If you're a homemaker, devote your 30-day test to completely giving of yourself without thinking about receiving anything in return, and you'll be amazed at the difference it makes in your life. No matter what your job, do it as you've never done it before for 30 days. And if you've kept your goal before you every day, you'll wonder and marvel at this new life you've found. Dorothea Brand, the outstanding editor and writer, discovered it for herself and tells about it in her fine book, Wake Up and Live. Her entire philosophy is reduced to the words, act as though it were impossible to fail. She made her own test with sincerity and faith, and her entire life was changed to one of overwhelming success. Now, you make your test for 30 full days. Don't start your test until you've made up your mind to stick with it. You see, by being persistent, you're demonstrating faith. Persistence is simply another word for faith. If you didn't have faith, you'd never persist. If you should fail during your first 30 days, by that I mean suddenly find yourself overwhelmed by negative thoughts, you've got to start over again from that point and go 30 more days. Gradually, your new habit will form until you find yourself one of that wonderful minority to whom virtually nothing is impossible. And don't forget the card. It's vitally important as you begin this new way of living. On one side of the card, write your goal, whatever it may be. On the other side, write the words we've quoted from the Sermon on the Mount. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Nothing great was ever accomplished without inspiration. See that during these crucial first 30 days, your own inspiration is kept at a peak. And above all, don't worry. Worry brings fear, and fear is crippling. The only thing that can cause you to worry during your test is trying to do it all yourself. Know that all you have to do is hold your goal before you. Everything else will take care of itself. Remember also to keep calm and cheerful. Don't let petty things annoy you and get you off course. Now, since making this test is difficult, some will say, why should I bother? Well, look at the alternative. No one wants to be a failure. No one really wants to be a mediocre individual. No one wants a life constantly filled with worry and fear and frustration. Therefore, remember that you must reap that which you sow. If you sow negative thoughts, your life will be filled with negative things. If you sow positive thoughts, your life will be cheerful, successful, and positive. Now, gradually, you'll have a tendency to forget what you've heard on this recording. Play it often. Keep reminding yourself of what you must do to form this new habit. Gather your whole family around at regular intervals and listen to what's been said here. You know, most men will tell you that they want to make money without understanding the law. The only people who make money work in a mint. The rest of us must earn money. This is what causes those who keep looking for something for nothing or a free ride to fail in life. The only way to earn money is by providing people with services or products which are needed and useful. We exchange our time and our product or service for the other man's money. Therefore, the law is that our financial return will be in direct proportion to our service. Now, success is not the result of making money. Making money is the result of success, and success is in direct proportion to our service. Most people have this law backwards. They believe that you're successful if you earn a lot of money. The truth is that you can only earn money after you're successful. It's like the story of the man who sat in front of the stove and said to it, give me heat, and then I'll add the wood. How many men and women do you know, or do you suppose there are today, who take the same attitude toward life? There are millions. We've got to put the fuel in before we can expect heat. Likewise, we've got to be of service first before we can expect money. Don't concern yourself with the money. Be of service. Build, work, dream, create. Do this and you'll find there's no limit to the prosperity and abundance that will come to you. Prosperity, you know, is founded upon a law of mutual exchange. Any person who contributes to prosperity must prosper in turn himself. Sometimes the return will not come from those you serve, but it must come to you from someplace, because that's the law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. As you go daily through your 30-day test period, remember that your success will always be measured by the quality and quantity of service you render, and money is a yardstick for measuring this service. No man can get rich himself unless he enriches others. Now, there are no exceptions to a law. You can drive down any street in America and from your car estimate the service that's being rendered by the people living on that street. Had you ever thought of this yardstick before? It's interesting. Some, like ministers and priests and other devoted people, measure their returns in the realm of the spiritual. But again, their returns are equal to their service. Once this law is fully understood, any thinking person can tell his own fortune. If he wants more, he must be of more service to those from whom he receives his return. If he wants less, he has only to reduce his service. This is the price you must pay for what you want. If you believe you can enrich yourself by deluding others, you can end only by deluding yourself. It may take some time, but just as surely as you breathe, you'll get back what you put out. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking you can avert this. It's impossible. The prisons and the streets for the lonely walk are filled with people who tried to make new laws just for themselves. We may avoid the laws of man for a while, but there are greater laws that cannot be broken. An outstanding medical doctor recently pointed out 6 steps that will help you realize success. 1. Set yourself a definite goal. 2. Quit running yourself down. 3. Stop thinking of all the reasons why you cannot be successful and instead think of all the reasons why you can. 4. Trace your attitudes back through your childhood and try to discover where you first got the idea you couldn't be successful, if that's the way you've been thinking. 5. Change the image you have of yourself by writing out a description of the person you would like to be. And 6. Act the part of the successful person you have decided to become. The doctor who wrote those words is a noted West Coast psychiatrist, Dr. David Harold Fink. Do what the experts since the dawn of recorded history have told you you must do. Pay the price by becoming the person you want to become. It's not nearly as difficult as living unsuccessfully. Make your 30-day test, then repeat it again, and each time it will become more a part of you until you'll wonder how you could ever have lived any other way. Live this new way and the floodgates of abundance will open and pour over you more riches than you may have dreamed existed. Money? Yes, lots of it. But what's more important, you'll have peace. You'll be in that wonderful minority who lead calm, cheerful, successful lives. Start today. You have nothing to lose, but you have a whole life to win. This is Earl Nightingale, and thank you.